Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
The only way to score is, of course, to play with a hand break off.
Hello, I'm Ian Stone. Welcome to Hand Break Off, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic. I'm here with James McNicholas and Art De Roche. Good morning, chaps.
Morning, Ian.
Morning. James, it's nice. You managed to get back home from Brighton on Saturday.
Yeah, I've just finished wringing out my clothes and my skin from a very wet and windy day on the south coast.
Yeah, quite. Well, I mean, it is one of those away matches that you think, oh, Brighton away. It sounds like, oh, everyone want to do that. I mean, I went to Bournemouth away and that was a bit of a nightmare. I was going to ask you, actually, those sort of away trips... As an opening question, those sort of away trips where you think, oh, I must do that, but then you sort of actually do it and think, actually, this is a bit of a nightmare. James, we'll come to you first. Brighton is really the one, isn't it, though?
Yeah, it feels so appealing. You know, the English Riviera. you think it's going to be this picturesque scene. And, of course, you're still in the United Kingdom, so the weather's still terrible. And getting to the ground is a bit of a pain. Getting out of the ground, actually, at the weekend was a bit of a nightmare in terms of sort of the queues for the trains afterwards, etc., which doesn't help when the rain's pouring down on top of you too. I'm trying to think of other ones that kind of promise more than they deliver. I mean, I actually think... I don't know if you've ever been to the Nou Camp, Barcelona.
Oh, that's
yeah. A bit of a nightmare for an away fan.
It's
in terms
rubbish.
Of the fact you're sort of kept in a bird's nest, essentially, at the very top of the stadium, and only really let out what feels like several hours after the game's actually transpired.
Yeah, I took my son to Barcelona. We had actually quite nice seats. I got them through a broadcaster for the Champions League game away. Still, we got soaked. Still, it was a pain to find the exit, the entrance, and in fact, to get out of the ground. They did have that nice sort of ham on a bone, though.
So, in the bit that
we went to. So, it wasn't too bad. And it was undercover, but it was still. The stadium is not really, it's falling apart a little bit, as are the team at the moment. Art, what about you?
The one that comes straight to mind for me is Olympiakos away, Athens. I think when you hit Athens, you think, oh, it's going to be a great time, best city ever. But you get there, the city's quite sketchy, to be honest, where I stayed anyway. And you're kind of looking over your shoulder the whole time, and then you kind of get to the stadium and you think, okay, yeah, this is going to be great. But yeah, it's just one of those where I think you probably build it up in your head a bit too much before you get there. And then when you get there, you realize it's not actually the best stadium ever. It's not the atmosphere is good, to be honest. But yeah, everything probably around the game itself isn't the greatest.
Yeah. I'm going Upton Park. I know it no longer houses football, but it was always a nightmare to get to. I also, by the way, had my scarves nicked when I was 13. I got shoved up against the wall by a couple of West Ham toughs, and they used to the kids. Oh, you won't remember this, but the kids used to wear scarves wrapped round each arm, each wrist. And I was walking proudly down the street with my Arsenal scarves and got shoved into an alley and my scarves nicked. And even as an adult, I don't want to sound like too much of an old man, but parking is a nightmare. And it is just a pain. It was just a pain to get to. Stratford is a bit better. And you do have quite a lot of nice food outlets nearby. So I am sounding like a very old person at this point. I should say that you can read the works of art. James and also Amy Lawrence and many other Athletic writers right now by heading to theathletic.com/ArsenalPod, and you can receive a third off a subscription and hear this podcast without ads too. That's theathletic.com/ArsenalPod. We will talk a little bit about Brighton 0, Arsenal 0. James, you wrote in your piece it was a bit of a come down for Arsenal, but Lee Dixon did a tweet, I think the day after the game, saying, I've played in hundreds of games like that. You get a 0-0 away, you keep a clean sheet. He said, I would have already forgotten it, move on to the next game. That surely is the attitude, isn't it?
Well, I think so, especially when it feels slightly fortuitous that you've got that point. I mean, you know, Arsenal were the second best team in that game. I think Brighton, you know, it's a decent point for them, but they'll probably look at that and feel like they did about a lot of their games last season, where they might well have won it if they'd been a bit more clinical in the final third. From an Arsenal perspective, to come away from that with a clean sheet, with a point, with this unbeaten run continuing, is a pretty decent result all in all, because they didn't perform. And there are going to be days like that where you're outplayed by the opposition. I think, you know, not losing was the most important thing in the circumstances. And the fact they were able to come away with that point, with that clean sheet, I think you've got to be fairly relieved and satisfied with that, given the fact that the quality of the performance we produced was just a long way off what we saw in the North London derby.
Yeah, I mean, James, you wrote, and I want to ask you about this, Art, you wrote about Gabriel's distribution not being as good as Ben White. He did one pass, I remember, through to Odegaard, who miscontrolled it. And really, aside from that, he didn't break the lines at all.
Yeah, I think with Gabriel, I think he's probably not the one you'd expect, but he can still produce those passes. I remember
He really pinged it, that one.
Yeah, in the North London derby, there were a few straight through the lines to Aubameyang that worked really well.
Yeah.
And you just want to see it on a, I guess, consistent basis. Obviously, the game against Brighton, you didn't really have anyone at the same sort of intensity, whether that was with their passing through the lines or even with the pressing. The intensity just wasn't there. That was there against Tottenham. And I guess that comes to, can you really have the same intensity every match day? I think teams have proven that you can to a certain extent, but then are this team ready to do that? I'm not sure. And I think, yeah, with Gabriel, I'm not too worried about that performance from him, because I think he's probably one of the players in the side that does have probably a higher standard of performance. But yeah, it definitely wasn't a game to be remembered by him.
No, I'll say this wasn't particularly a criticism of him. That was almost the only time I remember a pass breaking the lines, really. but it wasn't a great performance all round. But James, this is a young team. I think it's the youngest average in the league. They're almost all under 23. We lost one of our most experienced players in Granit Xhaka. I mean, I said to you before we started the podcast that I wanted to talk a little bit about fan overreaction. Now, I don't mind massively celebrating a win against Spurs and feeling euphoric, because we all did. And maybe there was an inevitable come down in a game like this, but the way that Arsenal Twitter goes into overdrive when we don't score, we don't win 2 or 3-0, and we don't play sparkling football, I think people have to take the positives, don't they? And like you say, a clean sheet away, a 0-0, another clean sheet, that is something to be proud of.
Yeah, I mean, I think you always have to be wary of kind of taking the social media sentiment as the true sentiment. And I fall into that trap myself all the time. But I think that being back in the ground, back among the fans, back in a full stadium has shown me this season, is that there is a difference between those two reactions. And I don't know if it's a difference between those two sets of people, but I think it might be just more how people express themselves online versus how they actually feel when they're there present in the stadium.
There's not a lot of room for nuance, is there, online, 140 characters?
No, there's not. And I think as well, you've got to remember that what you're seeing online is often people's very immediate reaction, you know, the kind of the seconds after the full-time whistle goes, the frustration or whatever it might be. It's not necessarily the most considered response, but it lives there in perpetuity. So we look at it and I think maybe infer more from it than we should. But I think the kind of broader point of how should Arsenal feel about this result, I think you need to look at the run since the international break, really, in which Arsenal have played, I think, four league games and a cup game. They've won four of those and drawn one. I think along the way they've had four clean sheets from those five games too. It's a pretty decent return, especially given what came before. And if you kind of think of the post the first international break as a kind of start of our season, which I know many, will frustrate many people, but I think realistically it was, given what went on in the transfer window and how far behind we seemed in our preparation and the injury problems and the COVID problems, etc., etc., I think we've had a pretty decent run there. And, you know, the game against Brighton, I think it was a disappointing performance in isolation, but in context, you would absolutely take the point, like you say.
Granit Xhaka, a lot of people didn't want him in the team. He came back into the team against Spurs after three games out from a red card, played great. I think, James, you used the phrase, he was like a minder, one of the minders for the young players. Mm-hmm. Do we miss him more than we'd like to miss him? And I'm talking about the fans by that.
Yeah, I do think so. When you see, I guess, the surprise when certain things happen, like him being brought back into the side for the North London derby, him staying this summer as well, you can see that fans still aren't totally on his side, Xhaka that is, but he is Mikel Arteta's probably main man. He was Arsenal's most used player last season and continues to be an influential figure in the way they play. Even against Tottenham, I think it was the second goal when Arsenal were playing out, and he basically saved Ramsdale's pass and just turned it into the goal.
Hojbjerg complained about a foul, yeah. But you know what? It wasn't. But
but I do think in terms of the style of play and building up that left side, he just brings that, I guess, right foot, left foot balance as well that Mikel Arteta loves a lot. I mean, you saw that with Pablo Mari and Gabriel being, I think, two of his first four signings, both left foot centre backs. So that's something that Arteta is quite big on. And even in pre-season when Xhaka was still on holiday from the Euros, that his kind of role in the side was still being utilised by, it was Elneny at that point, but you could still see that Arteta wanted to play through that kind of channel. And you saw that again at Brighton with Lokonga going into that space between Gabriel and Tierney. But obviously it just didn't work as well. So I think even when he's not in the side, he still has that kind of influence where Arteta knows the way he wants to build and that's the way he's going to try to do it. I guess the issue with that is when you don't have Xhaka, maybe you need to just adapt a little bit to the players at your disposal.
And that really, I mean, there's not a huge amount to talk about with this game, really. But I suppose that thing about the adaptability, in the end, did Mikel Arteta just come up, James, against basically a better coach with a team with a more coherent plan who've been playing together for longer? And in the end, you actually go, I don't care if they're Brighton. Actually, in terms of the way the teams are set up, they're probably a better team than us at the moment, and we should be happy with an away point.
Well, I think they're certainly a much better team than Tottenham Hotspur at the moment. And I think that much was evident if you look at the two performances. You know, I think Spurs allowed us to do things that Brighton just didn't. And they were very, very well organised. They were very athletic, energetic, synchronised in their press. And Arsenal really struggled with that. And I thought it was a test of kind of the confidence of these relatively young Arsenal defenders, you know, could they play out under that enormous pressure? And I have to say, I think they really struggled. I think, I don't know if it was the conditions, if it was the momentum of the game, but basically they decided we're not going to do it. We're going to look long. And, you know, every time they did, Lewis Dunk or Dan Byrne would nod the ball back over the halfway line from a bright perspective.
Massive.
Yeah, they've got 3 6'3" plus centre halves.
Yeah.
Competing with Aubameyang for long goal kicks from Ramsdale. Long goal kicks which were getting caught up in the wind, which weren't getting the same distance as you'd normally expect. So it just became this thing of wave after wave of Brighton attacks, you know. And every time the ball went out for a goal kick, suddenly we had to try and play it out and they could reset their press and it was a problem. And I think we just saw for the first time a few cracks in that kind of confidence, in that bravado, in that willingness to try and beat the press and take the risks that they took against Spurs and against Burnley and against others. So I think that that's kind of what happened, and that was a big part of why Arsenal couldn't progress the ball. Xhaka's absence was part of that, as Art says, but, you know, it's interesting. We talk about that line-breaking pass from Gabriel, but then there was a piece of miscontrol from Martin Odegaard, and I think the technical security that you normally would look to get from Odegaard or Partey or others just wasn't really there. You know, I think pretty much everybody had a bad day on the ball, possible exception of Emile Smith-Rowe, who I thought was kind of the bright light from an Arsenal perspective. And, you know, I saw the stats. He passed the ball at something like 95%, even in the opposition half. Brilliant ball retention ability, offered a threat on the break, ball carrier too. You know, he was great again, as he has been all through the season, really. But I just think Arsenal, the rest of the team, came up against a test where they struggled, they found it difficult, but that they held on. And to come back to that point, they took the point. And I hope that this will be a big learning experience for them. You know, Mikel Arteta will be loading up the video machine, I'm sure, and looking at this press, looking at how Arsenal struggled and trying to find out how can we play through there? What were the opportunities? What were the passes to pick? How should we have done better? And hopefully in time, you know, they'll reflect on this as a positive experience and one that they use to improve.
I hope that Mikel Arteta has something a little bit more advanced than a video machine as well, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but an old piece of real film clicking through a projector.
Reel to reel, yeah. Okay, yeah, take a draw, move on, which is what we shall do. By the way, there is a very good piece on the Athletic website by George Culkin about tribalism in football. I think the one pleasing thing for me watching that game at the weekend was hearing the Arsenal away fans and the noise they made. James, I'm sure you were in there. It's great being part of that when you're out singing the home fans. And I wouldn't say the Amex is the most vociferous home stadium that Arsenal will visit this year. But that tribalism that George Culkin talks about, that essentially it came from an American comment in one of the comment sections after a piece about the amount of hatred and essentially taking the piss out of the UEFA of the opposition that English football fans go in for. But that's sort of the point, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, at every away ground you go to, Burnley away, You're waiting to hear the away fans. And I think Arsenal traditionally travel better than they are at the Emirates. So especially for those Arsenal away days, it is great to just, once you're in the ground, actually hear them. And I know I've spoken about it a couple of times before on this podcast, but they're the ones you probably hear first at those away games, like at West Brom with Ramsdale as well.
And it does give you a charge, doesn't it? When you're sitting there watching it on TV and you hear those away fans, you think, go on, boys, there you are. And girls, obviously. But, you know, that's what you feel.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess it is quite funny as well. You do laugh to yourself when they do out-sing the home fans. And, yeah, they're going to have probably tougher challenges than the Amex. but yeah, it's still good to hear, nevertheless.
It is. I mean, James, you know, I remember Pochettino, right? I've always made no secret of the fact that I quite liked him as Tottenham manager. One of the reasons that I liked him was he used to talk about the Arsenal-Tottenham games and talk about how he felt like it was the right sort of hatred. So it's in the stadium, you properly hate them. And obviously on the way home, you don't get involved in any trouble. You just move on. But that's what makes the atmosphere great. I watched some video that was going around on YouTube of American sports fans singing I think it was Enter Sandman by Metallica. Mm. And I thought, I couldn't give a shit, right? I genuinely don't care about any of this. But you hear Arsenal fans singing, shouting, I was going to say bitterness and bile, but you understand the point I'm making about Burnley or about Chelsea. That's what makes it fun to go, right?
Yeah, and I mean, there's not a huge amount of enmity between fans of Arsenal and Brighton, but no. The soundtrack to the day was very much Tottenham get battered everywhere they go. And that you heard that before the game, you heard it during the game, and you heard it on the train home afterwards. And it does, you know, it's a big part of the flavour of English football. And when you hear foreign managers or foreign fans come to the Premier League, that is an element of the game here that they will always talk up. You know, the atmosphere and the rivalry. Yeah, it's a huge part of it. And I've got, as long as it's within, you know, some vague bounds of decency, I've got no issue with it whatsoever.
Exactly. What those vague bounds of decency are, we'll leave it to the fans to decide. Yeah. We have to police.
I don't police want to be the arbiter there.
No. Well, no, you're not going to stand there going, no, that, lads, that's too far. This is Handbrake Off, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
We were a bit with the handbrake at time.
Okay, Ian Stone here on Handbrake Off with Art DeRoche and James McNicholas. The Arsenal women's team continue to impress. I think that's 11 out of 11, Art. There's a really good piece in, I think, the Times today, Jonas Edvall, and what he's done. He's taken on a good team that Joe Montemurro passed on to him, but he's made them better. They've got a test coming up, though, haven't they, against Barcelona tomorrow, European champions.
Yeah, I think in terms of the team that he's taken over, there was definitely foundation there from what Joe Montemurro did in his 3.5 years at Arsenal. So you can't really dismiss that from, I guess, people now outside.
I wasn't dismissing it.
I wasn't saying you were. I was not saying you were. But I do think in terms of Edvall's approach, he's probably made them a lot more robust and competitive in big games. One of the first things he mentioned when he was appointed in the summer was that Arsenal had to be better when they were pressed high. That's something that they addressed very quickly this season against both Chelsea and Man City.
Maybe need to talk to the men about that as well.
Possibly, yeah. And I think in terms of the squad as well, Joe Montemurro beforehand preferred to have a smaller squad with, I guess, more versatile players, whereas Edvall very clearly wanted a bigger squad with a lot more depth. One, because of the amount of competitions Arsenal are playing this season. So they've still got the last season's FA Cup carrying over into this year. And then, as you say, they've got the Champions League group stages starting on Tuesday, which is tomorrow. It's going to be an interesting game. I think Montemurro actually, I guess, is quite smart. A few years ago, he organised a few pre-season friendlies against Barcelona and Wolfsburg, who are both very...
strong teams.
Very strong teams with a decent history in the Champions League. On both occasions, I think Arsenal lost, but it was about setting the mark for where Arsenal wanted to be in the future. Yeah. And now Arsenal are actually there, and it's not going to be an easy game by any stretch of the imagination. But I guess that was part of Montemurro's vision from at least 2 years ago, that now it's a time for Idavar to just take up the reins and show that he can, I guess, yeah, continue making Arsenal competitive in those games and taking them even further forward.
James, this is, I mean, what Art was talking about there was strategic thinking, right? And we're talking about 2 years back. Maybe with a men's team, they have to show a bit of patience like the supporters of the women's team have, and they're seeing the results now.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think also the club have to take a bit of credit for some serious investment in the women's side, which maybe hadn't been as present. They've brought in some big talent. They're trying to keep some even bigger talent in terms of Vivian Miedema, whose contract runs out relatively soon. You know, I think it's made a huge difference. It's all right saying I'd like a bigger squad, as Idavar has, but you need to deliver on that and you need to bring in the right players and the right profiles. And on the women's side, the club absolutely have done that. There's also been big turnover on the men's side, like you say, and it does feel like a kind of fresh start. It is that curious thing where Mikel Arteta has actually been at the club for quite a long time, and yet there is also this feeling that maybe in the last few weeks almost feels like the first time we've really seen his team, his Arsenal.
Yeah.
And I know that will frustrate many fans because they'll say, well, he's had an awful long time to get the team where it should be. And yet it feels like that period of judgment only truly commences now. It's a really important season. It's a really, really important season for the men's team because of Arteta's contract situation as much as anything. You know, I think a decision on his future will probably need to be made around the end of this campaign. I think he'll have 1 year left at that point, and they won't want the uncertainty of that necessarily going into next season. So it's a defining period. A lot of the work has been done off the pitch in terms of the transfers, the support, the strategy. But I do think it is on the coach now. And, you know, earlier in the show, you said, did he come up against a better coach in Graham Potter? It's really difficult to judge that. But what I would say is Potter is someone who's got that Brighton team kind of fulfilling his will. They are playing his idea, his vision of football, and that's very clear. There's an obvious plan and they all adhere to it. But that hasn't always been as easy to see with Arteta's Arsenal, and that's where he needs to get, as well as obviously getting the points on the board that we require to be in contention for European places.
Quite, and 5 goals in 7 games. We need to improve that for one thing. One other thing we want to talk about, Tomáš Rosický turns 41 today.
Sanya plays it across, Rosický's there and scores. Arsenal have turned this game round. They were 2 goals behind and now they have the lead. What a comeback so far. This is a brilliant game at the moment and a great finish for Tomáš Rosický. You've got to give him great credit for that.
James, I'll start with you. I mean, I loved watching him. Injuries maybe stopped him from being an Arsenal legend, but I remember one of the goals he scored against Spurs in one of the 5-2s. I love saying one of the 5-2s. Yeah. I mean, he joined the club in 2006, 2 FA Cups, 170 appearances, 19 goals. But it could have been so much better, couldn't it, really?
Yes, I think that's true. He was an incredibly gifted player. I remember when Arsenal signed him, the excitement, I think, was it at the Euros or the World Cup? We'd done the deal and then he banged in a goal for the Czech Republic from about 30 yards. We thought, what have we got here? As it turned out, he didn't do that all too often in an Arsenal shirt. Scoring goals was never a big strength of his, but he did get some big ones, especially against Spurs in the 5-2. Like you say, I remember fantastic one at White Hart Lane off the outside of his right boot that flew into the far top corner.
Yes.
There was one in an FA Cup tie where he robbed Danny Rose on the halfway line, sprinted through to the goal and chipped the keeper. The thing that was incredible about Tomáš Rosický, he missed so much football. He had those terrible hamstring problems. You know, I think he had multiple surgeries to try and fix that situation. But he used to talk about his football age as opposed to his real age. And because he missed so much football, when he played, he seemed to have a kind of effervescence and youthfulness about him that belied his true age. And he had an incredible sprint on him. He had fantastic energy. I think he's a player who could absolutely have played, you know, in this current modern Premier League, because he had that sprinting power, he had that intensity to his game, as well as the technical ability. I absolutely loved him. I wish we'd seen more of him. He's now working, I think, as the technical director in Prague. Maybe it's Sparta Prague. I hope that's right. And who knows, you know, maybe one day we'll see him back at Arsenal in some capacity. But if he does come back, he'll get a fantastic reception from the Emirates crowd, because he was a super player, super attitude, and someone I know all the coaches at Arsenal particularly really adored.
That little known fact about that goal against Spurs, when he ran from the halfway line, my partner was coming to pick up my son, who was at the game. She used to pick him up so I could go to the pub with my mates. And she got there, I don't know, however long before the end. And when Thomas Rosicki scored that goal, all the police horses shit themselves at exactly the same time, just out of interest. She said it was really a sight to behold. I mean, I don't know how much you saw of Thomas Rosicki, but he's the player we're sort of hoping that Martin Ødegaard becomes, I think, right?
I think we spoke about it last week, maybe. Maybe James brought up, like, just like he just did about his pressing. And I know that's something we see in Martin Ødegaard pretty much every game. Obviously not so much at Brighton, but I think that energy that he just kind of brought to the side in terms of dribbling, but also just being able to sprint for almost 90 minutes and seem like he wasn't tired. And the things that stick out to me about Rosicki are just, whenever Arsenal were in that kind of second half of the season fight for the top four, it always seemed to be him that ended up scoring all the goals at the end of the season. Remember, aside from the Tottenham goals, West Brom away, I believe, and Sunderland at home as well, the kind of basically Wenger ball with Jack Wilshere and Giroud, and then he just chips over the goalkeeper. So
doesn't get quite as much press, that one, as the Jack Wilshere one against Norwich, does it? But it was equally good.
Yeah, I think. That's not a conversation that I should probably bring up, which one was better. But
we can do that at some point.
But yeah, I think definitely he's one, because I think also one of my favourite seasons was the 07-08 season, and he obviously played a major role in that season. So definitely look back with fond memories on Thomas Rosicki.
Yeah, and happy birthday, 41 years old. Let's have a song before we end the pod. Art, we'll come to you first.
So I'll go with Clarity by Mac Miller, because it feels like that's what the Brighton result almost gave people after having such a high after the Tottenham game. Now, I guess the level of the team is a bit clearer, so I'll go for that.
Clarity, clarity, figure all this out, I ain't gonna take a charity.
Nice. What about you, James?
I've gone for Umbrella by Rihanna, because I wish I'd had mine.
Yeah, fair enough. Are you allowed to take him in, though, to be honest? I'm just wondering, can it not be used as some sort of weapon or something?
Almost certainly. Yeah.
Okay, I'll have Take It Easy by the Eagles. I genuinely look at the fans and the reactions, and I just think, calm down, for goodness sake. I'm not going to say it's only football, because I absolutely don't think that. But it's a long season, and as Lee Dixon said, take the point, get on the bus, move on. That's it. Thank you to James. Thank you to Art. And thank you to Abby, our producer. We're back next week in the international break. Hopefully Saka has a minor injury, so he doesn't play in that. And we can get him back fit and ready for the game in a couple of weeks. And thank to you guys for listening. This has been Handbrake Off, the Arsenal podcast, brought to you by The Athletic.
Hey, As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.